Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by you guys. You guys are going to join me here in the studio. It's a small studio. It's going to get kind of cramped. I'm a little nervous about the practicality of this. I probably should have thought this over the first time or before we went this direction. But, oh, well. I'm joined by you guys. You guys are going to send in, or you guys have sent in, you guys' questions. You got some good ones in here. It's funny. The very first review I saw was somebody who just wrote Anthony, and it just sounded exactly like a response to one of the terrible jokes that I say. She's like, Anthony. You know, I get that a lot from Jen or my mom and my dad, my dog, now my daughter too. But let's just go ahead and dive into these questions. It's not going to be as long a show as usual, just because you guys don't want to hear me ramble on for forever. So let's just dive on in, though. The first question is actually just for Pete, but I'll answer it anyway because I can do that kind of a thing. Lakers Van 85 writes, great show, love listening daily. Quick question for Pete. I'm answering. If Kuzma's defense and shooting has improved as much or as more than he showed with Team USA, is there a world where the Lakers play Kuzma at the two, and would that be a good thing? I don't see it personally. I think I could see it if the front office had its way. I think they would push Kuzma out onto the court however humanly possible. We saw that last year, but I think it would be a mistake. I think with Kuzma, the sooner they can get him into a role that he can focus on and focus on improving in, and then, you know, you can always expand outward from that role, but identify that role early on, let him get comfortable in that role, and then if there's time to let him build upward or outward from there, great. But I thought one of the things that kind of wreaked havoc on his season last year was the amount of jumping around the lineup that he was doing. So let's not do that again, right? That's kind of how I would approach things with Kuzma. I'm interested to see what Pete has to say. I would imagine he agrees if just based on the amount that he and I have spoken. But we'll see. Darth Shaktus writes, great podcast, guys. Even though, Anthony, I do disagree with some of your takes, I still love listening to you because I respect the fact you're not afraid to express your opinion, and you do it in a way that makes for a good listen. Thank you. Hope you and Pete keep at this for as long as you can. I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. This is my dream job. Question. Back during our last five championships and for the three-peat and then the back-to-back, which playoff opponents made you most nervous heading into those matchups? And confidently assuming the Lakers make the playoffs this season, which opponents would you be nervous about? Let's see. Thinking back, obviously the Celtics made me nervous, but I really wanted to play them. So, you know, I also it's the same kind of thing with LeBron there too, where it looked like the Lakers were going to play LeBron, but Dwight Howard and that Magic team shot like crazy and shot up a bunch of steroids like crazy. So that was kind of a bummer not to get that matchup. Teams that made me the most nervous, the Blazers really made me nervous. I actually was a little more nervous about the Blazers than I was the Kings. The Kings shooters, for whatever reason, clammed up in big moments. So I the Blazers obviously had crazy lemon booty when the Lakers made their comeback that one year. So, yeah, but the Blazers were so talented. I wish they had a better coach than they did in those years. But that roster, you look back at that roster and you kind of ask yourself, how did they not do more? So that was the team. And then team that I'm nervous about now or most nervous about now, man, I'd probably say Denver makes me nervous just because I really respect Jokic. And I think he offers the Lakers a difficult matchup in that he has the size to give Davis problems. And he also spaces the floor. And he's a great passer from everywhere on the court. So I think he gives the Lakers the most problems of any real individual player. I would even say like that. I would extend that across the entire league. I think Jokic is that good, and they seem to, and they have the continuity. They have the shooting that if they get hot, the Lakers are kind of sort of screwed, as we saw against the Brooklyn Nets. That if a team shoots well and the Lakers aren't doing enough to stop those shooters from getting hot, then you're kind of sort of in trouble. And then they also have the size up front that the Lakers, you know, they wouldn't be able to just dominate like they have elsewhere throughout the preseason. So the Nuggets, I think, the Nuggets to me are the Lakers' toughest matchup this year, in my opinion. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your questions. All right, let's start here with Capti and Matt. He writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, how would a pickup game go if it were Anthony and Harrison versus Pete and Darius? Also, would the game outcome differ if everyone was in their primes?" Harrison didn't have a prime, is the problem here. Harrison is the least athletic person I know. And even if I was in my prime and, you know, played out of my mind, I don't think I would be good enough to beat Pete and Darius by myself. I definitely know I wouldn't be good enough to beat Pete and Darius by myself, because that's essentially what it would be if I had Harrison on my team. I would like to play a game of 21, or I would have liked to have played a game of 21 with Pete and Darius and see how that goes. I think that'd be fun, or a game of knockout, right? Or it's just a series of one-on-one kind of stuff. I would really like to get together a game of you know, between the people who cover the Lakers. There's some pretty good athletes out there. McMenamin, I've seen him shoot. He seems, you know, pretty athletic. Chris McGee, Geeter, is like a really good athlete. He gets out there and he plays beach volleyball, which is just a really tough sport to play. So I think he'd be really good. I wonder if James Worthy would even want to play. That'd be fun. But then you got like the people who cover the team. I think Christian is a pretty good athlete. Grant Goldberg, who, you know, used to do stuff with Silver Screen and Roll, now does stuff with Bleacher Report. He used to wrestle, so you just like wrestle muscle is just a different thing altogether. So I think that'd be fun to watch him play, though he's kind of small. Sorry, Grant. That'd be fun. It'd be fun to try to get that together and see how everybody does. But I would need like a good 6 months warning so that I could claim that I was going to go to the gym and get into shape and then not actually do any of that and show up and make an ass out of myself. Saul the Kid writes, "Assuming everyone had the same progression in their career, what record would the Lakers have, or how would the Lakers look if we never traded away any of the guys from the tank years? D'Lo, Zio, B.I., Hart, Julius, Zoo, Thomas, Bryant, Nance, J.C., Kuzma, etc.?" Like, if they just stuck with the rebuild and didn't acquire LeBron, I guess. I think I would have them as like a team that fights to get into the playoffs but doesn't in the Western Conference. And I think eventually the Lakers and Lakers fans would get so frustrated that they wouldn't stick out that continued rebuild. There's no superstars in that group. Like, I think D'Angelo Russell is probably the most talented player of all of them, and he's obviously an all-star, but he's not a superstar, right? Julius Randle is probably going to be an all-star this year, but he's not a superstar. Lonzo Ball appears to his kind of career is charted out as like a really good role player, not a superstar. Brandon Ingram, I think, wants to be a superstar, and teams are talking themselves into playing him like a superstar with like, you know, creator duties and all of this. And I don't quite see that. And in order to advance in the playoffs, let alone win a championship, you need at least one or two superstars on your roster. And the Lakers wouldn't have had that. And then I also would be nervous about the defense on in that group too. Zubats is okay in some matchups. Julius Randle, when he wants to try, is a pretty good defender. But you know, Thomas Bryant isn't really known for his defense. D'Angelo Russell, not really a defender. Brandon Ingram is a pretty good one. Lonzo Ball is a really good one. But I'd be a little nervous about that team's defense. So, yeah, I'm glad that the Lakers are built the way they are built right now. Cobron James writes, no more LOL. I listen to basketball. Oh, it's not a five-star review. But look, I get it that the political stuff was heavy this week. I do. And we tried to, you know, not spend an insane amount of time on it. But it's also the kind of subject that you have to talk about, right? On a Lakers show, I thought you had to talk about it. But and if you're going to talk about it, you have to spend enough time to make sure that you do the subject proper. You spend enough time so that you have a nuanced discussion on a very complicated topic. And I thought we did that. But, you know, if you come here just to listen about basketball, I'm sorry, that's just not the show. KCP's Inclement. Every so often you guys sneak one of these names by me. And that's a funny one. KCP's Inclement writes, Anthony and Pete, I listen to the podcast daily and love the Lakers content. With all the flack you've been giving Rondo since he was re-signed, I'm surprised you haven't talked more about Quinn Cook. He's a solid player that has had some good moments on some very good playoff/championship teams. What do you think his role will be as the season progresses, and do you think his playoff experience and shot-making ability give him an edge over Caruso and Rondo? Yeah, I mean, in terms of guards who just outright show the most to me, and now it's a small sample size with him because he only played that one game and he shot the ball out of his mind, but in terms of guards who showed me the most, I think Quinn Cook absolutely did that. He handled the pick and roll better than I thought he was capable of. I really enjoy shooters who know that they're a good shooter and use that shooting ability to their benefit in terms of the type of closeouts. He does a lot of hesitation stuff where he kind of pauses his dribble and makes it look like he's going to pick it up and take a jumper, and that kind of forces the defense to stand up or whatever because he has such a quick release, and then he's able to go by guys when they stand up. So I really like him. I do have concerns about his defense. So if Avery Bradley comes out, I think he's going to be the starter on opening night, and if it is apparent that he can't stay on the court for, you know, matchup reasons or foul trouble or whatever, or he isn't spacing the floor, I think Cook should probably be the first guard off the bench, and then Caruso, and then, you know, Rondo somewhere in the 0 to 30 seconds range in terms of average playing time. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take the Lakers to recognize and believe in the production that Quinn Cook has. But look, apparently LeBron vouched for Cook by himself, so that's probably a good sign. And if you have LeBron on your side on these things, then, you know, it stands to believe that you're probably going to get a good opportunity on this team. All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to finish out what is granted a shorter show today, but I'm going to race through as many questions here as I can possibly do. All right, Bay Rister writes, hey guys, love the show. This preseason game that Rondo is out has been very fun and got me thinking, if it means he retires tomorrow, would you be okay with the Lakers retiring Rondo's jersey this season? I'd do it. Screw it. And then you can always take it down. That's a funny question, though. Most people, I actually read this question earlier, and I sent this in the Silver Screen and Roll Slack that we all have, and I was surprised that like a lot of people were like, no, absolutely not. It was either no, absolutely not, or yes, absolutely do it. I had a you guys are gonna laugh at this. I had a dream I think it was like Thursday night. Yeah, Thursday night that I got a Woj notification that Rajon Rondo retired. I have a problem, you guys. I think about this way too much that I'm actually dreaming about it. So, yeah, probably not great. My psychiatrist wasn't thrilled to hear about that. I'm kidding. I wonder, though, for this hypothetical, I wonder whether if you retire his jersey, like, does it have to be the same size as all the other ones? Does it have to be hung alongside all the other ones? And look, I'll go so far as to say this. This is a case for retiring his jersey and having him retire. If he retires, if Rajon Rondo doesn't play at all this year, that would make me believe in the Lakers as a championship favorite. So if having him retire and retiring his jersey makes you the championship favorite, if you agree with me on that, isn't it a pretty easy call to retire his jersey? I would say probably so, because that would mean a decision of his put the Lakers in a spot to be able to win a championship. That's the kind of thing you would retire a jersey for anyway. All right, next question. Wilson 3312. Love the show. I work the night shift, and you guys make my works not as long. I appreciate that. Let's go Lakers. Oh, no question. All right. Well, you're welcome, and thank you for listening. Righteous Man writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, great show. Keep it up." This is more of a comment than a question, but does Pete know his Twitter is featured in 2K20? When playing my career, there's a social media tab where I see Laker film room posts within the game. Curious if he knew about this. Yeah, he did, and Kevin Jones, Kevin Jones, the guy who runs Blue Wire, actually hooked that up for all of their hosts. So, like, the guys who do the Cav show, the Chase Down pod, like, their stuff is on there. Cav Zanita and Carter, I think he's still Carter Shade, Samus Faniani, and who's been on the show, and Andy Liu. They have their tweets on there as well. So it was a really cool, really good idea there by Kevin, who had contacts there and said, "Yeah, let's just all do this." And that was pretty cool. That was a good move on his part. QBreezy12 writes, "Rank the following on Anthony's pain scale: Rondo, Tyler Ennis, Byron Scott, Clayton Kershaw, Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins, and the Rambai." Man, this is tough. So I put Kirk Cousins at the very top because he is going to single-handedly hamstring an entire franchise. Because, like, not only is he terrible in those really important games, but he's paid as if he's not terrible in those really important games. So I really don't like Kirk Cousins. Case Keenum, like, he didn't really bother me. It was I thought Mike Zimmer was a moron in the way that he handled that situation. Like, everybody knew it was fool's gold with Case Keenum, and they do this weird thing in sports sometimes where they say the end result is enough to either make or don't, you know, hold off on making a decision. And it's like, okay, so Case Keenum was a good quarterback or played quarterback well for that team. By all measures, Teddy Bridgewater is as good, if not better, than Case Keenum. So why not play the better quarterback, who also you traded up into the first round for, you know, and just to see what you have there? Like, they could have had Teddy Bridgewater playing quarterback for them right now at, like, a fraction of what they're paying Kirk Cousins right now. And that would allow them to invest elsewhere across the roster. And they didn't. And I legitimately believe that's the kind of decision-making, that's the kind of flawed process that is going to stop them from winning a Super Bowl. Like, they're never going to win a Super Bowl with this core. And it's a really talented core because of the decisions and the way that they went about making those decisions with Kirk Cousins and Case Keenum and Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater. So that's a bummer. And then in terms of the other people, so I put Kirk Cousins at the very top, Case Keenum at the bottom probably. Clayton Kershaw, man, he's up there. I go Kirk Cousins, the Rambi, Clayton Kershaw, Byron Scott, Rondo, Tyler Ennis, and Case Keenum. That's how I'd probably go there. Rondo and Tyler Ennis, they can't help it. They both suck, so there's nothing you can do about that. Byron Scott kind of is in that same boat. He's just not a good NBA coach. He conducted his business out here in a really poor manner, and now he's probably never going to get an opportunity to be a coach again. So that's good. Clayton Kershaw is tough because like he brings up like a special level of pain because he is this great talent. But like at the end of the day, if you're going to be considered an all-time great player, you have to pick your game up in those moments where Clayton Kershaw tends to go in the opposite direction. So yeah, that's so I probably go, like I said, I go Cousins. Did I say Cousins, Kershaw? Yeah. Cousins, Kershaw, Scott, Rondo, Ennis, Keenum. Yeah, that's how I go. Oh, Rambi, it's just, I hate nepotism, and they are nepotism. Let's go one more question here. LA240825 writes, "Hey, Anthony, I have a question for you and Pete about Staples Center. Do you think the arena could use an upgraded scoreboard? I've been to Staples twice, and that scoreboard is pretty small compared to arenas like the Pepsi Center and the new Chase Center. Is that a Lakers thing, or is that a separate corporation that would have to fund it? Thanks, and I love the show." I believe the guy who owns, or the group that owns the Kings owns Staples Center. So, like, I don't think that's talked about nearly enough, that the Lakers pay rent, basically. Like, the Lakers are considered this marquee franchise, and they don't have their own arena that they own outright. That's just, it goes further to show that, like, the Buss family, they're broke compared to other owners, and now, especially now compared to, like, Steve Ballmer. Ballmer's like, yeah, sure, I'll fund a $2 billion stadium. I have that in my couch. The Lakers not owning their arena outright. And what that does, too, is that, like, when you go to Staples Center, this is kind of a bummer, but when you go to Staples Center, the whole vibe around it is kind of soulless. Like, it doesn't really feel like a Laker event. It's just like you're in this arena and the Lakers happen to be playing there. Whereas, like, if you go to the Forum, you walk around in that Forum and you say, oh, okay, yeah, this is, you, there's Lakers in the fiber of this building. And the fact that it isn't like that at Staples Center is kind of a bummer. And like, these arenas, these stadiums, the owners who build them, they benefit from that year round. Like, it's a very worthwhile investment that the Lakers just for whatever reason aren't interested in making. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Lakers, a Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for sending in your questions. We have plenty more to get to over the course of the week, so that's what I'm going to be focused on. I'll ask Pete tomorrow about that Kuzma question, see what he thinks about that. But, you know, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.